underneath the concrete jungle of Kalamazoo. Anarchy on the airway.
The People's Power Hour on 89.1 WIDR.
Now, he's a spoiled brat. Tried the nice guy who's cooperating with the president.
Okay, why don't you tell us a little bit about what we use oil for?
Megan, you know better than I.
Well, we use oil for basically everything. Many people think of it just as the gas in the gas tank, but it's really embedded in our modern lifestyle. Take agriculture, for example. About 10 calories of fossil fuels are embedded in every calorie of food that we eat. That includes natural gas fertilizers, but pesticides are derived from petroleum as well as herbicides. And just think, of course, of all the traction and then the transportation of our food, which travels an average of 1,200 miles to get to our plate. So we're consuming how many barrels of oil per capita, Pat?
Oh, 60 barrels of oil equivalent for all our fossil fuel energy.
All right. Well, then, can you tell us what exactly is peak oil?
We didn't get that. We didn't hear that one.
The question was just a general question. What exactly is peak oil?
Well, peak oil is the point in time in which the world reaches maximum production. It the term came from King Hubbard, who was a petroleum geologist, who in the late 50s said that peak oil was going to occur in the United States in 1970, which it did. And Hubbard was able to derive his forecast from looking at the oil discoveries that had occurred. So he then later predicted that peak oil would occur in the world roughly in this decade, and that's what we're dealing with. And it's going to be the day that we produce the maximum oil we can, and then it begins a decline from then on until we run out, which will be about 30 to 40 years.
All right. Do you think that peak oil will affect the world equally, or will some countries be more affected than others?
Well, I think definitely the other countries will be differently affected, and in fact, right now, the effects already beginning to show up, because as we approach peak oil, our production growth levels out. So the countries such as the Philippines and Indonesia and the countries around Ethiopia are already beginning to experience it, because as it goes up, they can no longer afford the prices. So they're sort of pulling back from the oil market.
Okay, let's see. We'll try that again. Sorry, we've got some pretty lo-fi technology here at Wider FM. Question was about Cuba and how they're dealing with their oil crisis there.
All right. Go ahead, Megan.
Well, that's a great question. As you know, Cuba, when the Soviet Union collapsed, lost half of their oil overnight. So they've gone through a major societal crisis in terms of oil. And we've visited Cuba three times in the past few years and studied what they've done. And the major activities are the switch to urban agriculture and animal traction, and just in general, transitioning to more of low energy awareness there.
So, as far as urban agriculture, is this people who have gardens and small farms within the cities, basically?
Hello, can you hear us now?
Yes.
Okay, beautiful. All right. We were just talking about Cuba and how they overcame their oil crisis. Why will other solutions like hydrogen not be sufficient to sustain energy use after peak oil?
Well, hydrogen is a manufactured material. Basically, hydrogen is derived either by steam reformation of fossil fuels, normally natural gas, or it's obtained by electrolysis of water. And both of these processes require a tremendous amount of energy to make the change. So that when you do produce hydrogen from fossil fuels, it takes about twice the energy that the hydrogen will produce. And if you produce it from electricity, which would be generated by wind or solar, it takes about four times the amount of electricity to produce it than it will produce. So the use of hydrogen basically means you're going to be using far, far more energy than any other possible form.
Four times the amount that goes into it comes out.
In the process of electrolysis.
Right, and if you look at other alternatives such as wind and solar, which a lot of people point to, we think that they're important, but right now wind and solar combined are only giving us a tenth of 1% of our nation's electricity. So they're not going to be able to substitute for oil, and really no other combination of sources will be able to substitute for the massive amount of oil energy that we've been using.
This is a point that comes up again and again when we talk to people about peak oil recently, too, that this kind of this myth that, oh, yeah, we'll have hydrogen and, you know, industry is going to come up with some great solutions here and it's all going to be okay. But it seems like the real fact of the matter is that reducing consumption seems to be as much, if not more important than other technological solutions.
Well, that's certainly our viewpoint. We're all for the continued development of the alternative energies and the implementation of wind power and solar systems. But we don't think they're going to come anywhere meeting the volume of energy that we need. David Pimentel, a scientist who studied biofuels, generated a report about 18 months ago that said, in his best opinion, at the best, coming up with all the possible sources, maybe we could provide 40% of the energy. But even that would be difficult. So given the fact that we have to proceed on those, but the most important thing we can do is start curtailing our usage, and we're going to have to do that.
All right. Then tell us, what does the community solution propose to what can we do to cut back?
Megan?
Well, that's a great question, and that's something that a lot of people are developing as well as we are. We advocate for several things. First of all, just looking at your own life, looking at how you use energy, and in what ways that you can realistically cut back. And we give, on our website, we have a presentation that has ways that you can cut your energy use by a factor of five. So such things as looking at transportation, and trying to do more ride sharing, of course, and in general, just looking at everything, every way that you use energy in home heating, the food that you buy, starting to buy more local food and grow more food yourself, insulating your home better, for example, all those things.
Now, also, building smaller homes, just living in a way that's lighter on the earth, and taking everything we're doing and scaling it down. The average new American house is 2,400 square feet in size, and the average European house is 1,000 square foot. The European cars get twice the mileage, so in Europe, on a per capita basis, every European uses slightly less than half what an American does.
How are we going to be able to convince people to make all these sacrifices? Because we're used to some pretty cushy lifestyles here in America, and how can we convince people that it's in their best interest, really, to cut back on their consumption?
Well, I think it's going to hit them before we even have to convince them. I mean, it's starting to happen right now with gas being close to $3 a gallon. People are making the changes. I've talked to people who I wouldn't even think would register to them, but they're now biking to work, for example. And I think that it will affect everybody, and it will force them, in effect, to change their lifestyle. Another thing is that we talk about is looking at inequity in the world and looking at the consequences of our way of life, not only the ecological consequences, but the political consequences. And I think if people could see that aspect of it, then they would voluntarily reduce their energy use.
By the way, there was a report in the newspaper today that the government's projected that home heating prices will go up 71% in this heating season.
That's just enormous, because already natural gas prices have been so high. I mean, just even, I know from personal experience, paying my own heating bill. So that's going to be a real tough thing to swallow this year.
You mentioned political situations, political consequences. I guess, do you think that the energy crisis we're facing is going to lead to resource wars of some sort?
Well, I believe that's quite likely. If you recall, a couple months ago when China made a bid under the concept of free trade for an American oil company, that Congress stopped that. And in May, a Chinese general made the statement that any war fought with America would be a nuclear war, since there's absolutely no way they could defeat America in a conventional war. And the front page art of the Wall Street Journal today was on a specialist who advises the Secretary of Defense, and he looks at China as the major enemy of the United States in the future, And basically, it's over oil and natural gas resources.
All right. Well, moving on. As far as what things we can do, would you like to talk about the second conference on peak oil and community solutions that is coming up?
Yeah, the conference is going to be held this September 23rd through the 25th, so pretty soon. And you can register on our website, www.communitysolution.org. We have 300 people coming from all over the country, representing almost every state. And we have a very impressive lineup of speakers. Richard Heimberg, the leading educator on peak oil in the U.S., wrote the book The Party's Over. He'll be giving one keynote. Michael Schumann, the author of Going Local and who's a community local economist, will be giving the other keynote. We have Steve Andrews talking about alternative energy sources. We have several people from the communities and eco-village movement. We have an agricultural economist. We have Jan Lumberg, founder of Culture Change. Some of you may know him and his work on peak oil. Robert Waldrop, who's the moderator of the Running on Empty peak oil discussion group and the president of the Oklahoma Food Cooperative, is going to be talking about local food systems. And Pat and myself as well will be speaking and also will be showing the premiere of our Cuba film. So it's an exciting event, and it's going to be probably the largest U.S. conference ever held on the subject of peak oil. And it's going to be here in Yellow Springs, Ohio.
Hi, I'm just wondering, I was thinking about, like, and trying to figure this out for somebody that's, like, you know, is not up to the date on this subject, but, like, somebody that's just listening now and is thinking, well, why would, like, our government, for example, try to protect oil interests when they know it's going to run out, and, you know, trying to go that route instead of, like, right now, you know, like, pushing all of that, every, like, available resource towards, you know, because, I mean, they know it's going to run out. It's not like a, you know, a thing that's like, oh, you know, the Earth is infinitely deep and there's, you know, so many dinosaurs and stuff. But, no, you know, it's going to run out. So why is for somebody like me, a yokel, how can you explain to me why the government, for example, would take such a radical stance as to not, you know, face this problem?
I think the answer to that is based on our sort of two fundamental philosophies. Peak oil and that concept is based on science. All these people that are predicting that are petroleum geologists with PhDs and decades of experience. But it comes contrary to our economic system of unlimited growth. And the economic theory that is expounded by a lot of economists in the government and in businesses is fundamentally there can be no limits, that the free market will always create an alternative. So when you run up against that, you actually are running up against people that says resources are finite, who come from the science community, and then you are opposed by the people that come from the economics community that basically say there cannot be any resource limits in a free market.
All right.
There are some people in the government that are now starting to realize the situation. Roscoe Bartlett, you may be familiar, U.S. House of Representatives, given several speeches on the floor on the issue. The Hirsch Report came out earlier this year looking at peak oil and how to mitigate the situation. But as Pat mentioned, yeah, there's the feeling that we'll just continue our way of life with coal and nuclear, and that's really what the administration and the government is pushing, going in that direction.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who like to maintain that illusion. Real quick, can you tell us about Agraria?
Yeah, the Agraria Project is a main project we have at the Community Solution, and it's a proposal for a model post-peak oil neighborhood community that we're building here in Yellow Springs, and we have it specified on our website, www.communitysolution.org. Essentially, it's a combination of low-energy, small housing with intensive organic agriculture and just the creation of a sustainable neighborhood that can kind of be a model for other communities to incorporate as we transition as a country to a post-peak oil reality.
All right. Any last questions?
Where is Yellow Springs, Ohio, located in Ohio?
Yellow Springs is about 15 miles from Dayton.
Okay. Okay, so it's a little drive here for us from Kalamazoo, too. Is there a university in Yellow Springs?
Actually, it will be held on the campus of Antioch University, our founder was Arthur Morgan, who was one of the founders of Antioch and who set up its very liberal work-study program. After he retired from Antioch and working, and he founded the TVA as well under Roosevelt, he organized our community service, which is the sort of the parent organization for Community Solution. So we're right on the edge of the Antioch campus.
You've got quite an impressive lineup there for that conference. I encourage people, if they're really interested in the peak oil idea and this question, to, you know, it's a good thing to look into, because there's a lot of great speakers, including some people that we've actually interviewed on the show before, too. And I guess we're going to wrap it up here. So do you have any last remarks you'd like to make to our listeners?
Well, I think what I'd like to say to the listeners is the problem is serious, and please don't waste your time waiting for technical alternatives. So start looking at your lifestyle and make the changes that are going to be necessary.
All right. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Megan. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your work.
No problem.
All right. You're listening to 89.1 WIDR-FM. This is the People's Power Hour. We're going to take a short musical break and then some Jim Hightower.
I guess we're gone, Meg.
Did they hang up?
I think so.
Be careful of what you say. Be careful in every way. Be careful of what you do. Big Brother is watching you.